all around us, but we did. We normally always.
Yeah. Jose?
You were the one I first thought of when I heard
Jose?
That.
Here you go, Bill.
Did you look?
Firstly, everybody we know in Chappaqua was...
Good morning. Call to order the Committee on Budget and Appropriations with a quorum present and meeting with several committees jointly, but in interest of time, we have a request on public safety. Two items. Chairwoman Mark, public safety.
Yes. We have a forum to open for public safety. I am sitting in for Legislator Pinto, who is on his way back to the county right now.
We have a very ambitious agenda today, but for the purposes of the joint meeting of public safety, we have two important programs, Strax and Ricky, right? Gentlemen, for the record, you introduce yourselves and present both items.
Captain Paul Stasitis, Patrol Division Commander.
Sergeant Brian Hess, Patrol.
Sergeant Michael Dowd, Investigative Services Division.
All right, and for the listing here, we have Ricky, Chairwoman Myers. Just give us a synopsis of the program again for legislators that might have not heard about both programs, and then what these two items entail.
I can address the Ricky issue. The Ricky issue is the repository for integrated criminalistic information. That's big fancy terms. That's the program, the computer system that we use to transmit pedigree information, fingerprints, photographs to DCJS, New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, for persons that are arrested. As of January 1, 2010, New York State DCJS stopped taking the old-fashioned inked fingerprint cards. They will only accept electronic fingerprint transmissions now. So all of the prisoner pedigree information, their name, date of birth, the charges that they're facing, their photographs, and their fingerprints are transmitted through the Ricky system to New York State DCJS.
And so the state is in line with all counties pretty much with Ricky?
They're still struggling. We have some agencies here in Westchester that are still haven't purchased their own equipment. Right now at County Police Headquarters, we're processing this information for about six other agencies in addition to the Westchester County Police.
Are we receiving any compensation for that?
No, we're not, ma'am.
It's not costing us that much either, because we're doing it on straight time during the day. Mm-hmm. What we have them do, instead of them bringing the person to us, we have them bring the old-style fingerprint cards to us. Then we enter them into the system and transfer them up.
The way I understand it, this is yet another mandate that we must do it, although otherwise the information is not received.
These agencies would have no other means to transmit their information in DCJS if we were not providing that service.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Could you tell us do you know offhand what those other agencies are who you're assisting?
Yeah, right now, Yorktown is probably our busiest PD. I think the month of January we did about 55 arrest processing for Yorktown. We have North Castle, Town of Mamaroneck, SUNY Purchase PD. We've extended our assistance to the Pelhams. We have about 13 agencies in the county that are in various stages of obtaining their own equipment. The equipment is costly. Right now it's running about $30,000 for the basic equipment for these agencies to submit their information to DCJS. Also, please understand that this didn't come about overnight. DCJS provided at least 30 months notice, written notice to these agencies to that this date was coming.
Is there, following up on your question then, what is the incentive for these non-complying municipalities to purchase their own systems instead of using ours or having us do it for them?
Honestly, there probably is no incentive. The program that I worked on during the fall of 2009 to assist these agencies, what I strive for was to limit county liability by not allowing these agencies to physically bring their prisoners to county police headquarters. So what we're doing is they still take their old-fashioned fingerprints on ink cards. I've asked that these agencies roll three sets of ink cards for each prisoner, because we won't know the quality of their fingerprint cards till they come in. The system that we use, the software, which is written by a company called Comnetics out of Oakville, Ontario in Canada, what we may look at with our eye and say looks good, the software may not accept it. So by bringing the three cards, we have the option of putting down more than one card till we get the best image and transmit it.
That's another answer to your question, but the only thing that actually their only incentive is convenience for them. If they get the system, it'd be more convenient for them. By us not letting them bring their prisoners to headquarters, you know, it limits our liability themselves, so it's another inconvenience on them. They just can't drag people up the street and bring them in. So right now, that's not the only advantage to them.
What would prohibit the county from saying, fine, however, there is going to be an administrative charge?
That I don't know.
I can't answer that question.
I don't think there is a prohibition in doing that.
It's great and lovely that you guys are doing it, but it does save these municipalities from having to make a major investment without at the county's time and expense. Whereas other municipalities have made that investment.
Since we started providing this service the first of the year, we've only had two occasions where a local municipality has come in to submit their arrest information when my office wasn't open. I run the forensic investigations unit, and there's only been two occasions since January 1st that we've done it outside of normal business hours. Is it costing, like the captain said, we're not incurring overtime per se, but I am tying up one of my people for a considerable part of his workday when these agencies come in. We've asked these agencies to call ahead, which they've all been very cooperative with. And of course, we've left the door open to assist these agencies on very short notice on a extremely important basis. If you know, they have a horrific crime, and it's imperative that they confirm the identity of the suspect that they've arrested. That can only truly be done through fingerprint submission in DCJS. So we've left that door open. And like I said, to date, only on two occurrences have we had to process information on non-business hours. They realize we're doing them a favor, and these agencies are, from my opinion, very grateful for the service. And they're cooperating with us.
Yeah.
Would you accept a motion?
Sure.
So moved.
Second. For the discussion?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to read through the
draft
IMA. So I gather, therefore, the draft IMA, the actual, we asked to vote on today to authorize, these were the municipalities who participate with you. Right, those agencies who are outside the system, they have nothing to do with it. So, our action today is clearly responding to the need to reauthorize your authority to enter to IMAs with those cooperating agencies. Yeah. Make sure we understand what it is. I have been concerned for quite a while on this. There's been a few years of what the no rap, no bail kind of situation. Where, and I've been told over the years looking into this that access to information to local courts, when not, especially those courts that don't have all the updated equipment, not able to give a local judge a rap sheet. And the judge says, well, no rap, no bail. At least that's anecdotally what I've heard over time. And obviously there's a major cost to the county. There's no bail, and people go into our system, and they start with the health care and all that kind of stuff. And whether, not everybody's entitled to bail, but presumably sooner or later, many of these folks do get out on bail, but they lack that information. Is this those that are cooperating or participating and have the equipment, part of that data, I assume, at the arraignment initial, they can plug into the system and get all that data, and rap sheets, if there are any, are now available. Is that what this is getting, part of what this is getting at?
I had similar concerns when this came on board, when this situation came to light the end of 2009. Depending on the arrested individuals, the charges that individual is facing, the police department still have the option of posting pre-arraignment bail or issuing a release on their own recognizance.
Okay.
And I'm leaving that up, obviously, to the local police agency. I will say this, once they do come to headquarters with the information, the rap sheet is returned through e-justice within minutes. That rap sheet will be back at the court before the officer leaves headquarters and drives back to their municipality. It's just a delay in...
I say those municipalities that you are assisting, you're still able to get the rap sheet back, but only after they get to you.
I mean, yes.
Okay, so... But I figure, put those municipalities aside for the moment. Those that are participating, I don't see it directly in here. I mean, it's part of their local process, and a local police department can, for whatever reason, choose not to go into the back room and punch in, I guess. But in theory, with this equipment available, in theory, a judge can get the rap sheet available. They should be able to go into the next room and punch in and get that data. Is that what this, I mean, I'm trying to understand what this gets to.
Well, what the RICI system is mm-hmm. a networked system where all police agencies in Westchester and Putnam counties that submit their information through this network, it's an information sharing database. In other words...
So this doesn't plug into a state system, because if someone has an arrest record out of Buffalo, you're saying that data is not, they can't access it through this system?
We don't have the local... access to that. We would only have the access to that through the rap sheet response.
So why wouldn't, I don't want to get out of jurisdiction, but why, they have this whole system set up for sharing, this can't plug into that state system at the same time? I mean, again, with a particular goal of a rap sheet, to try to get people, if they're going to get bail, entitled to bail, have that information so the judge can have it. This system doesn't speak to that larger state?
It does on the rap sheet level. What the RICI system allows police agencies to do is to access the data within the system. In the course of an investigation, Yorktown would have access to information that Yonkers has on a local Yonkers arrest. Photographs, fingerprints.
Right, I'm sure there's a lot of data that they can access, but I'm just trying to understand very specifically for a rap sheet purpose.
Yes, this system does speak to DCJS.
Okay.
And then based on information that DCJS receives from this system, it in turn sends a rap sheet back to the inquiring agency through e-justice, which is basically email.
So can I make an assumption, can we make an assumption that those municipalities, again, that have this system, that are signing this IMA, that are working with you, if they are using it,
they
that
can get
any judge in those jurisdictions should not be left without a rap sheet?
That's correct.
Okay. So now we're back to those municipalities who are not in the system. They clearly, once they get to you, you get the data back. But until they get to you, there's still that problem. To the chairman, I sort of support this reauthorization, but I think the issue, Madam Chair, that you were reaching to, I think we should seriously consider, as long as it's not prohibited by some kind of state law, sitting down with those municipalities, but basically imposing a fee, said not for nothing. We want you in the system. There's all, there's the direct costs we're getting here, but there's those costs. Those local courts then are potentially denied the appropriate information at appropriate time. People are going, maybe a week later they're eligible for bail, whatever, but I think we should sooner or later really work on that. But
yes, it shouldn't hold this up, I agree.
And we should be open to suggestions from your department to see what, I mean, the incentive is information, for the municipality. That's the bottom line, and this is today's communication.
One other follow-up. About a year ago, we were getting into this. We were told some municipalities were doing this work for other, those who had the equipment were doing it for the neighbors. Are you saying now, basically, they come to you, or you still have some municipalities?
There are still some agencies that are sharing it.
So they work between themselves.
Where the agencies we targeted the end of 09 were the agencies that were still mailing or hard cards up to DCJS.
So in addition to the municipalities you mentioned to Legislator Harkin, there are others who may not have this equipment but are have worked out a relationship with their neighbors and working that way.
A lot of agencies that have the equipment bought it off of various grants, and a lot of times stipulations in those grants, I believe the town of Bedford PD had the grant written for the equipment, providing that some of the smaller agencies in the northern part of the county, Lewisboro, Somers PD, could go into Bedford to transmit their arrest information. So there are some shared services out there that are being offered outside of the county police. What we at county police realized the end of last year was this deadline was fast coming, and we had police agencies in the county that would be unable, without our assistance, to transmit this data to DCJS. I believe it was about a year ago I was up here at a meeting. There was a representation from the Chiefs of Police Association. And some of the different PDs in their labor agreements with their PBAs require that if a prisoner is to be transported outside of their township, their municipal boundary, they need two police officers in the car. Well, some of these agencies on a midnight tour may only have three police officers working. So you, in theory, you're stripping 67% of your manpower to transport one prisoner, and that potentially may leave as few as one officer covering the rest of their patrol responsibility, which is spread thin. So what I was asked to do the end of 09 was to come up with a plan to allow these agencies to come in without stripping their patrol force during a midnight tour, weekend, evening shift. And we have seen some delays. We've seen arrests that have sat at the local level for in excess of a week before that data came in. I don't think any of them were remanded. I shouldn't speak for the local courts because a lot of these charges are minor, traffic infraction, petty larceny type cases, A misdemeanors, level of crimes that a prisoner probably wouldn't be held without bail for. But we have seen a delay.
Yeah, no, that's, hopefully maybe the Public Safety Committee would go into some more detail to see how operationally how it works, but something is wrong there, the whole concept of shared service. I mean, you're doing what you can, but big picture, there are issues there. I want to, one other question. It's interesting, and I appreciate the officers being here, but the county is entering this municipality. We clearly are will be authorizing the law, but has the administration taken position on this, and why isn't an official member of the administration here giving their input? So usually the case.
I just spoke with George about it, and it's leaving up to their discretion.
So the administration has no. So the administration doesn't support this. Then I will. I'm gonna put you on the spot, but the administration has to think that they actually support this.
Right. They're leaving it for your discussion and where you would like to take it.
Well, we can discuss it, but I mean, I don't want to anticipate a veto. I think it's highly unusual in all the years I've been here, one, for the administration not to be part of the presentation, but if that's one thing, but not at least send, they may not have time to be at the table, but to acknowledge to the board that they support it. I assume it was sent to this to us by.
Yeah, they submitted it.
So the county.
Yeah.
So the county executive, you transmitted the letter. All right. So we do have a statement from the county executive. I urge you to adopt this legislation. So at least on record. But it's I think we should always at least have a statement, which I guess we do have in the transmitted letter. But it's unusual for them not to be here. Anyway.
All right. Is that a second?
No, I support it. It's already been seconded.
It's been seconded. No, it wasn't.
No, I'll second.
Not for budget.
No. I'll second.
Yeah. All right. Second by Mr. Rogowski. Any other comments from the members? All in favor for both committees, if I may, Chairwoman?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. This just means we're moving forward with Ricky. Be forthcoming to also the administration with. What incentives? And again, this is the information a
And they'll be bringing it up to the boss.
Yes, please. Moving on to Trax.
Yes. Trax is the New York State Traffic and Criminal Software Program. This is the program that police officers use in their car to complete electronic summonses and electronic accident reports. I believe we are just requesting to extend the existing IMA to the 25 agencies, local municipalities within the county. And then we are the lead agency with the state, and we offer support and technical assistance to those agencies.
And again, is almost everybody online with Trax?
25 of the 43 departments in Westchester are online with Trax. Yeah, the agencies that aren't online might be using their own individual other products to get it up to the state, but the state's is a free version we just offer to municipalities.
Bill, before you go, I'll accept the motion, if I may, Chairwoman,
for both committees.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Harkin for both committees, second by Mr. Burton. Is Mr. Burton your...
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
The transmittal letter, the attached active, will allow the remaining municipalities, the ones that are not currently in the system, to participate. Do you have any inclinations from them, any discussions with them? How many, if any, were willing to step forward?
No, sir. I believe everyone who is online is online already. I haven't heard any requests for future.
No requests for future. All right, well, it seems to be, from your perspective, then, it's working well. You're satisfied with the program itself? And
it's a great program. It helps the officers on the road. It helps court clerks quickly enter information. Helps our records people quickly get information in the system. Because the officer in the field puts it into the computer system. There's no re-entry along the different steps of the process.
Minimizing, hopefully, future mistakes. Or
exactly. Yes. Right.
I recall it from years prior.
So this is okay.
All right, one second, and all in favor.
All right.
Aye.
Opposed. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I guess you are able to adjourn public safety, Chairwoman Myers.
Yes. Do I have a motion to adjourn public safety? Second. We are adjourned.
Melanie, you're going to give us.
All right. Mr. Williams,
yes.
We added the First Man Amendment, So we're going to remain in session for budget only for now till we come up to further joint meeting. Mr. Williams, your subcommittee on this specific item has signed out this item, right?
No, we signed out the legislation on health, which is 8:30, right?
Not this. Yes.
Okay. 8:30. 8:30.
This is 8:10.
And I will be happy.
All right, it's on your agenda for budget item 8:30. We are going to be visiting right now, and
we're not doing that.
And Sally,
yes.
8:10 is on the agenda for. Okay. All right.
8:30. I don't know that I have that.
We're doing 8:10.
Yeah,
we're doing.
Yeah.
Which? What are we doing?
It's the added start.
8:30.
Oh,
we're not doing 8:10 now.
No.
We're doing 8:30. Do we have an extra copy of 8:30?
It's in your packet.
Well, I don't. That's why I'm asking. I don't have it.
Oh, after C1.
8:30.
I just put them in. No, wait.
Oh, it's
like
top.
The beginning, yeah.
Mr. William,
my apologies.
Yes, thank you. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Legislator Myers and I, who are co-chairs of the Special Committee on Health Insurance Savings, our committee met last week, and we approved proposed legislation requiring non-represented employees and retirees
who worked for the county for less than 20 years to contribute between 5 and 15% of their overall cost of the premium rate for the basic health insurance coverage. The proposal is in a tier system that deals fairly with mid-year changes in the employee insurance cost while providing relief to taxpayers. This approach, the approach we took models similar public and private contributory plans that we've seen where there is a transition. Many of these plans, when they transition from either pay to non-pay or transition from one year, from one rate to another, often applies to new employees, new hires, and intend to grandfather existing employees. We wanted to give some recognition to that concept or that model by looking at the length of service. The proposal also is less regressive than the straight across the board 15% proposal because higher paid managerial employees will contribute at the top rate of 15%, while lower rate long-term employees will contribute at lower rates depending upon the length of service with the county Westchester. The legislation now, as you see before this board, this committee, as I said, it really takes into account, it lays out that all employees who are more than 5 years but less than 10 years with the county will contribute 10%. Those that are less than 5 years will contribute 15%. And employees who work for the county for more than 20 years will not pay anything into the plan at this time. The county elected officials, department heads, commissioners, and those that have titles and rates that are called flat rates are going to pay at 15%. So most of the higher paid employees are going to be in the 15% bracket. Retirees will pay the amount that is equivalent to the rate that they are retired at, no less than they're paying today. They will not be paying less than the rate they're paying today, but it will be based on the rate they retire at. It is very, very important to understand this as we go through this. This is an interim plan. It's a plan that will go into effect July 1. And would sunset on December 31st. Why is it an interim plan? It's an interim plan because we believe that to really achieve real savings, significant savings, and to really do that in a way that takes into account comprehensive evaluation of plans, offer employees a wider variety of plans at different costs, offer them pre-tax benefits, pre-tax benefits that offer the plans on a pre-tax basis, contributions on a pre-tax basis, so that the county saves money from Social Security and the employee saves money from their federal and state income tax. And look at the deductibles, look at the co-pays, and the entire process of how this kind of analysis ought to be done will be undertaken in phase two of this process. And phase two means that what we would do is that after the committee passes this legislation out and it goes to the floor and the legislation is passed, we then commence a joint effort with the administration to evaluate all of the employee plans that are available, to talk to all of the experts, to develop a plan, to have that plan ready for the enrollment period for employees, so they, when they go to enroll in their plans for next year, they would know precisely what it is that they're paying, they would know precisely what benefits they're getting, they can make choices, and that would go into effect January 1 of 2011. That is the most sensible way that I can see us transitioning.
So
that is the way that most private as well as public sectors transition from one plan to another. You don't just initiate a plan in the middle of the year by just putting a percentage in and forgetting about how it works. And that's what we're not prepared to do. I think the committee has studied this as an interim plan for that reason. We've reached out and letters going to the administration Mr. Oros has expressed the view that they're willing to work on a comprehensive way going forward, and I think that's something that we can do together. So the proposal, as it's in front of you today, does lay out the amounts of the cost, as I said, employees that are...
Except there is a correction to be made.
Yeah.
But let me use the wrong figures.
Okay. But they use the wrong figures in what?
Well, remember, we found that the family rate was... What had been incorrectly given to us as $22,000.
What page you on, Madam Chair?
It's the page that breaks out the 15% health benefits.
Yeah.
With the dollars.
The scoring was done... The scoring, the cost analysis was done on a comparable basis. There were some errors. Let me just get to that. If you look at the face of the legislation, the 15%, there is, unfortunately, there's this debate whether we should do this 15% plan or do something else. If you're looking at this in a way that you're looking at a large amount of savings later on, and you're looking at this comprehensively, and an interim plan, these are, to some extent, it gets into the silly season if we're going to just talk about something that's interim versus the long-term savings. And as a committee, we really felt that it is more sensible for us to look toward the long-term goal rather than spend our time bickering over whether it's 15%, whether it's 10%. We wanted to get an interim plan in place to establish that employees will pay a part of the cost of their health insurance. And the 15% plan, as it was proposed, had several errors in it. Errors in terms of, first of all, the number of employees that were being considered. It had errors in terms of the cost, the individual premium equivalent for individuals as well as family members. So that proposal, regardless of what you think of it, needed some more work as it was. I don't know whether they've done other work on it. But we're proposing this to move forward, as I said, as an interim plan, and looking forward to working cooperatively as we look at the big picture and the big savings, really, that the county can achieve without actually putting employees in a bind. I think in most of these situations, health insurance cost today is very, very expensive. Coverage is very important. When employees have choices to make as to what coverage they will take, given the cost, they can make intelligent decisions, and they can make it ahead of time, ahead of when that plan will affect them, as opposed to now where they are stuck in a plan that January, when they enrolled, they were not told they would have a cost to it. So we're trying to balance those two, the two policies, and I think that we've done that in a way that is fair and reasonable, and that's what this proposal does.
And at the sunset period, some adjustments would be suggested from your committee again, as necessary.
Yes.
Well, we're hoping to work, as the legislator said, we're hoping to work with the administration on a total review of what is available in the marketplace, analyzing everything from whether we should continue to be self-insured or whether we should use an insurance company.
Members?
First, I want to thank Williams Myers and my committee for jumping in and getting going on this. And I certainly appreciate the interim status. There's so much involved, and I think, as you say, 6 months, whatever it is, we need to get to the long-term plan. But just a couple of quick questions, just for the record, really. People who might retire during this 6 month, I'm assuming we pass this, it's on the books, people who retire during the time this law is in effect, even though it sunsets, I assume, for the rest of their lives, they will be guided by what's in this plan. So,
current retirement plan.
Right. So,
doesn't get affected.
If in fact the more comprehensive plan changes in some way, they retire between July and December.
Right.
They live with this. I just want to make sure we understand that. Okay. And the impact on current retirees, this does not get anything on. One of our colleagues has been looking at alternative salary ranges versus percentage ranges versus years of service. But again, we can go different ways. But again, this is interim. It's it was interim. We're taking a years of service approach. Whether or not that long-term plan might go back and take a look at salary ranges with some kind of different sense of fairness, that's something that the committee will look at. But this is picking on the years of service approach. And finally, just again, a suggestion as we move forward, like to get on the record, I've seen some private companies go individual. They call it husband and wife. You might call it spouses or partners, whatever the appropriate language is. And then families. They have three categories.
Because
I can envision, especially when you're looking at the numbers of 7,000 to 22,000, someone who were in those partner status or husband and wife or thinking about getting married or living together, and they think if they actually get married and now they go from 7,000 to 22,000, what does that mean? And so I say there are private plans out there that separate individual quote-unquote husband and wife, so to speak, and then families. And so for now, I guess we're into the system with this, but as we move to that more comprehensive plan there, I'd like to encourage marriages, for example, if someone's going to live together, say, well, in fact, they're not going to get married, because that happens in Social Security and other situations. So the long term, but I think they've done a good job.
It highlights the complicated this endeavor is and has been. Other members?
I just want one more point. Yeah. There is a little error here on the in the matrix that we have set up. Okay. It says that the plan will go into effect at the time of it initially adopted. It goes into effect at the time it's effective. It really doesn't matter because the effective date is July 1st.
July 1st. Yeah, okay.
Just want to clarify that.
Chairwoman Myers, you had another amendment on the numbers. Can you highlight that to make sure that the
Act itself has the correct
numbers? Yeah, okay. Numbers. This attachment is
illustrative.
The attachment is illustrative. So let's go with the numbers on the Act, people, which is the actually binding
I'd like to put one other thing on the record.
Yes.
I imagine most of the people affected by this non-represent have gone, I think it was 2 years or 3 years without a raise, and without knowing now what the anticipation is of the administration as they go look towards next year, they start the budgeting. I would like to state that I would hope, as we put this in place and presumably something like it or different will go into place for next year, I would hope the administration will seriously consider looking out for these non-represented work on their salaries in the next budget. It's important.
And to that point, Mr. Rogowski, we have rank and file people making more money than some supervisors, depending on the level. And yes, it seems a bit dysfunctional. Mr. Ryan, I have you on the list.
Just for clarification purposes, the number under elected officials, how was that constructed?
I think the number on elected officials is probably erroneous because, as you know, elected officials cannot change their. You can mandate a change in the midst of their term, in compensation. And so, on advice of counsel, we were making this elective, meaning that an elected official will elect to pay the 15%. The scoring is definitely wrong. I mean, because it's the scoring that says one is really not, because there is no elected officials have now could have elected since the law has not been in place. Yeah. So if you assume that, you can make assumptions about the number of elected officials who would elect, but it's not. Speculative, right?
Arthur,
that number, there are several elected officials that have opted out of the plan. That's why that number is 15.
That have opted out of the plan, meaning?
They don't get the
those are the ones that are in the plan?
No, just these are the ones that are in the plan.
Okay, you have one.
No, it's one family.
Oh,
one individual and 15.
Oh, one family. Oh, I'm sorry.
They can opt in or out.
Okay, all right.
So in the entire pool of all 17 legislators and the county executive, the DA, the clerk,
right, it's only 15 elected
and that entire pool, a number of those individuals have opted out of.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not covered.
Currently, do not participate in the.
Yeah, I don't participate in the county plan. I know that for a fact.
And again, we mentioned that the tables are illustrated at this point. Yes.
We make a point on the committee report on the third page of the signature page, where the committee encourages county elected officials and their county officers appointed for fixed terms to voluntarily, because we recognize that the law is such that you cannot diminish the rate of pay, but nevertheless, we are encouraging people, and I think most of our colleagues. No, it's up there. It's still encouraging there. County elected officials are appointed for fixed terms voluntarily. Second one.
Got it. Okay, it's not
and
in the last.
I'm not aware of any elected officials who are in the plan who they did not be planning to make a voluntary contribution. I think the press particularly should be made aware of that point. That while we're not required, yeah. Most of us will volunteer.
Yeah, we did make the. I think the reporter might have covered it in his the last article. That it was
it was
he's still here.
at this point, is there another comment?
I would like to speak, please.
Yes.
And a couple things I state for the record. Well, I appreciate the work the committee did to come to this approach. And I understand that there's a lot of input sought and a lot of thought that went behind this. I will not be able to support this. I think this is a bad approach. I think this is a mistake. I think you are setting a bad precedent for the future health benefit issues for our county employees, and let me tell you why. One of the goals here, I know that it was the county executive's goal, I know it was my goal, I don't know what all 17 people were thinking as they were coming to their positions on this, but my goal was that this would be a model for when we enter into the collective bargaining phase of dealing with our county workers and medical care. I think all of us, hopefully all 17, when we realized that Westchester was on a handful of counties in New York State that didn't request employee contribution for health care, we realized we had to act. I understand this is the act that many of you have decided to go with, and I understand that the county executive had a different act, had to deal with it. But the goal was that in the end of the day, it's costing the taxpayers of Westchester an enormous amount of money by not having the employees contribute to their health care. And the goal is, as we deal with tens of millions of dollars in deficit when we do our budget in December, is that we need to find ways to save costs. So I realize that this one act only deals with 400 employees. We're not looking at enormous numbers here. To me, this was the model that we would use as a springboard during collective bargaining. And if that's what this is going to be, I think that's a mistake. And it's a mistake because if you continue this as the model, you have foregone millions of dollars that we could have saved for the taxpayers when we do the collective bargaining. If this is the model that's used in collective bargaining with the unions, and this is the model that's approved, rather than the proposal set forth by the county executive, you have now given up millions and millions of dollars. Fortunately, this is all happening so quickly. We don't have a lot of all these kinds of numbers, but I think you all realize in your head that by scaling this so that some of the most highly paid workers in the county, or the higher paid workers in the county, in all the different departments, are going to pay 5% or 0% on the health care. You're exempting all these people out. You have now, of course you do. I mean, it's no question. Of course, that's not only is true, it's a fact. It could not be a fact. By doing 5% or 10% or 15% rather than 15% for all, by definition, you can't possibly not have cost millions of dollars. And that's why I think this is a mistake. This scaling thing that you've come up with is a mistake because at the end of the day, you know for sure now the unions are going to request the same type of scaling formula. And that scaling formula is going to, at the end of the day, bring a lot less money in through medical benefit contributions, which would have saved taxpayers millions of dollars. So I don't agree with the sliding scale approach. I like the more flat 15% for everyone. In my home city of New Rochelle, it's flat. It's 18% for everyone. There's no sliding scale. I think that's the way to go. I certainly think we could have probably compromised on the original county executive proposal and got something maybe we all could have agreed on. But I certainly can't vote for this. I think it's a mistake. I think it's funny to say this now, but I think you needed to put more debate and more thought into this, because this is a bad approach. I think it's setting a bad precedent on this issue. This issue is so important going down the road as a cost saver in our budget process, and holding the line on taxes and spending, which we all know is going to be a real problem in the years to come, particularly in this current economy. So I'm going to have to vote no on this. I think that's unfortunate, because I would like to have voted yes for something today.
On our response?
Well, I want to, first of all, while I understand my colleague, and this putting aside the pejorative, desire to go with what the county executive proposed, which is 15%, I think this board has a responsibility not to just rubber stamp a program. I think we have a responsibility to look at the program, evaluate it, and come up with what we believe is reasonable, and that's what we've done. Now, the legislator says that if this model you have given up is the model for collective bargaining, you have given up billions of dollars to the county, unquote. Now, that is pure speculation. The legislature does not negotiate with the union contract, the union contracts. This is a pure county executive function. We came up with this model by looking at other plans when they transition to a paid plan, looking at studies that were done. I think it's preposterous to suggest that somehow or other this was done so that a union negotiating, which will occur years from now, I would imagine, or maybe 2 years from now, would be that somehow or other suggests that we have taught this out to model it after that. That's preposterous. There's absolutely no basis for saying that. It is pure speculation. And I think to suggest that because we came up with a tier system, it's going to cost millions of dollars, again, that does not prove itself. There's no proof of that whatsoever. I think what we have, this is, as I said, and let me repeat, an interim plan for 6 months. We will then look at a comprehensive analysis, and maybe that's where the legislature needs to really focus. If we do a comprehensive analysis, and we've done a lot of reading on this, we can save a significant amount of money for the taxpayers of Westchester and keep a balanced and fair plan for county employees. We've spoken to POMCO, we've spoken to others, and that's the information we have received. Look, to say that we somehow or other have done this quickly, I read an article where the legislator wrote that we're taking too long to get this done. So I don't understand. You can't have it both ways. We had a committee. The committee have had meetings. We were free to attend. It was open to everyone. And we moved forward with this. I really believe that it's silly season, as I said earlier, for us to continue to beat this whole dead horse. We have enacted a plan. I think that the 15%, and my colleague talked about saving money. If you really want to save taxpayers' money, you would get on board on doing this comprehensively. Because every intelligent process takes analysis, complete analysis. Coming up with 15% and just saying, that's the number. Supposing it's 20%, it can be another number. It could be, but unless you study it, you really don't know. And to try to kind of criticize what we've done when we've sat and had discussions about this, I think that is really not it's not a fair thing to do. And I understand his desire for wanting to go along with the county executive's plans. It's had a lot of political play in the press. It's something that, they want to continue to draw on and continue to keep this going. But we have to come to a point that we've got to take this our obligations here seriously and move forward. And if we move forward in a way that looks at this thing comprehensively and try to work together rather than making, political speeches, I think we can accomplish our goals. And that's what I'm here to do.
All right, and that's a motion right now.
I would like to respond to that, please.
Yes.
This was directed at me. Thank you. Couple of points. I agree with the legislator that this board shouldn't have been a rubber stamp to the county executive's proposal. I don't have any question about that. I agree with him. But Interesting enough, my friend says this isn't time for political speeches as he makes a political speech. It's quite ironic. And says it's not fair to criticize. Of course someone should criticize if they disagree with this approach. What else am I to do? I'm a legislator sitting in this committee. If I don't agree with this approach, I must criticize it. I don't have a choice. And I do have a position. The position has been for 3 weeks now, which I happen to favor the county executive's 15% across the board for all employees. That's been my position, and I think what's being done today is an error. And lastly, just briefly touch on what my friend Legislator Williams calls speculation. And I guess to some degree it is speculation that when the unions want to go to the table, when they go to the table for the collective bargaining process, that they're going to seek this kind of model. But I think it's hard for anyone, and all of us, I think, in our different governmental experience, have been through the collective bargaining process. Of course, the county executive, by law, has to deal with the collective bargaining process. There's no question about that. But if you don't think that the unions are going to come with this to say, this is the model, we're not doing anything beyond this, I think that's kind of not looking at reality. Reality will tell you that if the 400 or 416, whatever the number is affected by this, if this is the policy the county is moving forward on your what you're calling an interim proposal, which may at some point become permanent, I imagine, you can expect the union are going to look for the same thing. And what does that mean? Let's look at your chart. It means that if the unions demand this and don't back off this position, hey, we're going to have... Well, I'll take that back. I can't certainly... Legislative Williams, you don't even have to come back at me on this. I'll not say what I was about to say. And that is, it's going to be a difficult collective bargaining process no matter what, regardless of what happens today. I think that we all can accept that. But if this is the model, if this becomes the model that the unions hold the line on, and this becomes the law of the land during the collective bargaining process, as you look at at the plan right here, all non-represented managerial county employees who have 5 years or more, but less than 10 years of county service at the time that this act is finally adopted, they do 10%. So I'm for 15% for those employees. That's 10%. It's 5,000 employees. It's hundreds, if not thousands, of employees that fall within that 5 to 10 year gap. They're now going to pay 10 to 15. That's when I refer to the loss of millions of dollars in revenues. And then you have with the 10 years or more, but less than 20 with the 5% contribution. That's got to be hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. And when you if this is the plan that is enacted through the collective process, which we have to vote on, by the way, Legislator Williams, not the county executive does negotiate it, we're going to have to vote on it. Again, that's giving up millions of dollars in this process. So, again, I'm sorry that I didn't agree with your plan, Legislator Williams. I understand you put a lot of work into this, and I appreciate that you decided, as a chairman of your committee, that you would look at this quickly and come to a conclusion and put some legislation together. And I think that's a credit to you. I just disagree with what you did. I think it's a mistake, and going forward, I think it's going to be bad policy for Westchester County. I continue to agree that 15% across the board is the best policy, and for that reason, I will need to vote no on this.
Mr. Rogowski, and then Mr. Albanato.
I'll try not to belabor this point to my good friend over there from Durichelle. Very quickly, I'm going to give you some political advice. I know you are, but this is what you're talking about is pure speculation.
You're going to become my consultant.
Next year, I'll work as your consultant. You just spent a lot, a few minutes in this red herring of millions of dollars. You're not paying attention. This is a 6-month deal. Next year, by the time the unions right. come to hold up, there'll exactly. be some. Now, it might be 3% across the board. It might be 33% across
exactly.
the board. We have no
exactly.
idea. So it's a little political. You started with your op-ed piece, which was, I'll give you that, but to say it's throwed as red herring, and well, if they do this, if millions of dollars of taxpayers' dollars, that's in the loud language. So pure speculation. What I will say is not speculation. Here's the political advice. In the spirit of cooperation, consensus, and the work that's been done here, you're obviously free to vote no. My political advice to you, by voting no, you're voting against saving taxpayers' dollars between July 1st and December 31st, documented taxpayers' savings. You're now, you tell us, you're going to vote against those savings. I would suggest, in the spirit of you might like 15% versus 10%. In Washington, they're so far apart, they get nothing done. We're not that far apart. I would advise you for six months, give the taxpayers 10% savings. You might like 15. I might like 20. But this is the deal before us. It's hard savings this year, and in the next several months, before we get to the end of this year, we will have a long-term plan, and it may or may not be taken by the county executive to go into negotiations, but it'll be a different plan. But I don't appreciate really sitting here with these millions of taxpayers' dollars, you're trying to get the next headline. It's 6 months of savings. So by voting against this, I want it very clear to you, you're voting against taxpayers' savings, and that's not a good thing to do. To my good,
like
my good friend over there.
That was directed personally to me, but I will be very brief.
Please.
I am voting against this plan, which saves some taxpayer dollars, because I support a plan that saves much more taxpayer dollars. I remember, for the record, there's a piece of legislation in this committee. It's 15% across the board. I'm for that. I will vote for that. That saves more money than this plan does. So my position, and anyone who supports me on my position, is for saving more tax dollars than what you are doing today. And that happens to be a fact.
One point,
Mr. Williams, and
the statement that the other plan saved, first of all, the other plan is really errors. So if anyone can put a number up and say, okay, I'm saving taxpayers' money. There was no similar study was done in terms of what that plan was. It was errors. They made assumptions about the cost of individual plans versus family plans. They made errors about the number of people who were affected. And so, sure, Mr. Maizano would vote on a plan that contained errors. But the fact of the matter is that we are going, this is an interim plan. We're moving forward with the interim plan. He has the right to vote the way that he chooses to vote. But we must move forward to save at least some money for the taxpayers.
Okay. And I'm going to put you on that, Mr. Williams, because we're not going to belabor this further. Mr. Avenatti, I assume you've been brief on what has
yes,
been
covered. Yes, I know what's going on. I'm not all talking about prior first refusal.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take this in a little different direction for a different type of discussion for a few minutes. I would like to make a proposal for a different interim plan. I was not on the subcommittee. I'd like to put this on the table for discussion if this committee decides not to do this. I understand. But it's...
They referred to it, Tom.
Huh?
I referred to it, Tom.
Oh, you did? Okay. This is a proposal for an amendment to the proposal that was given us by the subcommittee. Well, I discussed with some members.
Bob, another couple?
Sure. Well, you can move 20 if you want, but... Anybody else need it? All right. What this is a proposal to superimpose on what you have a sliding scale based on income. And it would basically take what the subcommittee has proposed and leave the 15% there. Make sure those are the correct ones or somewhat correct. And then amend it down slightly for those who make less money. The second thing is it would delete the word retiree. It seemed to me that the biggest issue that was coming at us from the management who had seniority was that they were concerned that if they didn't retire immediately, they would be paying this 15% forever, which would distinguish them from their colleagues who retired the day before. So that's why they were talking about retiring. And I think you can solve the management problem by deleting retirees. And thirdly, it was unclear to me what at the time of this act is initially adopted really means. Because what if somebody goes from, maybe you discussed that one already, but if you go from 10 to, if you go from 19 to 20 in the middle of this 6 months, what happens? And lastly, I have a question about what happens to the retiree who turns 65 during this time period. Are they going to continue to pay the full amount, or does it get reduced to a 15% of the amount that the county subsidizes Medicare?
Are you asking
yeah,
the question?
Those are the 4 points that I wanted to put on the table.
Mr. Williams, for discussion, this is an amendment to what your committee, you co-chairs, has to
meet. Maybe you want to work backwards on like.
Well, first of all, the retirees retirees would pay what they are paid what at the time of retire. If they retire between July 1st and December 31st, they would pay at a rate at the time of retirement. In other words, they would pay the 15%. If they are in a 15% bracket, they pay the 15%.
So that means if you retire between July 1st and December 31st, forever you're going to pay the 15%. If on January 1 we put in a new plan, you're going to pay more or less.
You asked me what they pay. Now, obviously, when we have a comprehensive plan done, we will do two things. We will define cost, coverage.
Well, I understand what you're planning to do. The question is, how does it affect those who've retired and gotten out of the system?
If you would let me answer the question, I can get to it.
Okay.
It would affect costs. It will affect coverage. And it will affect employees who are retired as well as employees who are active. That's what a comprehensive plan does. It looks at everything.
Have we had a legal opinion yet on the ability to do this in midstream? If you recall, I gave you a list of questions the other day, and I have a serious concern about whether there is a breach of contract between the County of Westchester and the employees who opted in last November for a particular plan, and then all of a sudden in midstream we unilaterally changed that.
Yes, we have. We've checked with the county attorney, and the county attorney says that the has given us opinion saying that the Board of Legislators can change the plan.
But they haven't addressed that particular issue, have they?
Mr. Chair, just this point, we also had the POMCO representatives here,
right,
and they indicated that they basically are creating a new open enrollment period, basically,
right,
for a classification of employees. And by doing it that way, it is creating the opportunity for people to, if they have spouses that are in other plans, that it is basically a life change event, and they will be able to modify their outside plans as well as opt-in out of the current plan. So that was asked from the POMCO thing, Mr. Chairman. And
that doesn't address the legal issue that I've raised from the beginning. Before January 1.
But that's the legal issue.
The county executive didn't address it.
They said yes.
The
county attorney's right here. He's right here.
Can we do this?
has the legal issue of whether it's an executory contract?
No, I mean, you're assuming there is some kind of executive contract. You should ask whether we can enact the plan. That's what the question was.
The question is whether you can change the benefits.
Yes.
Yeah, there is no contract between you.
That's different from the plan. Having to do with all that.
Right, that's a different issue. Yeah, that's the comprehensive approach.
I understand that we can change the benefits. The question I'm asking is, can it be put into effect in midstream? Because it seems to me that an employee who checks a box in November goes into a plan, a specific plan with specific benefits, and now all of a sudden, after they've agreed to either pay a certain amount of money, join one particular branch of the plan, et cetera, now all of a sudden that is changed in midstream, and they had signed up for something for a year.
Mr. Chairman, just on that same point, with POMCO said that they would do it. Let's say Abenanti's point is well taken, and we asked it directly.
Well, it's not just a question of whether they can get out of POMCO. The question is whether you have agreed to a contract which is binding for 1 year.
And the answer that the POMCO folks said to
us. POMCO is only the question of whether they will allow you out. That's a mitigation. That's not a question of the contract itself.
Oh, I can tell.
I appreciate that. That's helpful, but that's
The legislator is assuming that somehow or other you cannot charge the employee a cost of insurance in the middle of the year.
Yeah, because they opted in back in November.
Okay.
Now, we're moving with the legal advice that we can. So with that assumption,
I put that question on the table.
Now, you are attempting to amend a proposal that the committee...
Well, I wanted an answer to the question of, let's assume an employee retires tomorrow, July 1, okay?
Right.
July 2. Is paying 15% of the full, the 15% is based on that employee's own plan or on the average cost to all.
Hold on, I will give provision. No,
and that was highlighted earlier, and I think Mr. Rogowski has the question. They will retire under whatever plan they're under.
Agreed.
Basically,
Agreed. I understand
that was clarified.
What it says is they will pay 15% of the average premium. Now, when an employee turns 65, they're no longer getting that.
Well,
and the cost to them now is only the supplement to Medicare. Am I correct?
No. Can I?
I'm wrong.
Let's see, wrong.
Your premium is the same. So the county's paying a premium for people for whom we're not providing insurance? We're not providing benefits, though, because Medicare picks it up.
Secondary.
Then it becomes a gap.
Well, that's why we have to look at this comprehensively.
So the premium is not a distinction
in the premium.
Exactly.
So they don't reserve.
So
we need to look at that.
Yeah. So at that point, then, it's going to be less expensive for the retiree to... It would be less expensive for the retiree to drop out at that point and buy Medigap insurance rather than pay $2,000 or $3,000 a year for this.
No, but the county's paying $22,000. That's the real
cost. No, but this is not a premium. This is a self-insured average.
Yeah, but
the county is...
The equivalent, what the legislator is saying is that if the equivalent of that is factored into the county's cost, then that ought to be considered. And that's part of what... We need to look at. We talked about that.
What I'm talking about is you've got 6 months here of employees who have to decide whether they're going to exercise their rights to retire. And one of the issues, especially for the older employees, is going to be, wait a minute, I'm going to have to pay $3,000 forever, even though my primary insurance is now Medicare.
What time you've
employees?
The 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, they're not missing the 50% gap. You're mixing that years of service with money.
Well, that's the next question.
Once you throw in like red herring, once you throw with older,
I don't have any red herrings.
From 19, I think that's a red herring.
I put no red herrings.
Hold on.
I support. It's not a red herring. It's called legislation.
I'm not satisfied with the answer here because you're telling employees who are older employees that they're going to continue to pay 15% of the $19,000 cost. Forever, even though the county is not putting up that kind of money for them. You're spreading the cost among people who now no longer are getting that insurance.
I don't understand.
That's why this
in other words, you're paying, we are paying a part of, everyone is paying a part of the cost of the plan.
Correct, but today.
You know, it's a secondary plan. I mean,
But it's not, it should not be a $19,000 premium anymore.
Well,
because now it's Medigap.
There's no Medigap provision in our plan.
Well, that's a failing of our plan. That's not
No, it's because we're self-insured. So when you're self-insured, you're doing a
take that money from people's
cost.
Right.
It's not based on
the what is the average Medigap plan cost?
Well, it depends on the program.
That's Tom. The six-month plan.
Well, yeah, it's simply just... All right. The last point I wanted to make then was what happens if somebody... I think you've answered that. The last one then is I would like to see a superimpose.
How much attention do you
give? I would like, huh?
Go ahead.
Okay. I was not a member of the subcommittee. I asked to be on it. I was not on it, and I also was out of town when you were meeting on this, and I have serious concerns about some of the proposals. This is not an easy thing to do. I have even graver concerns about the county executive's proposal. Okay, so I disagree with my colleague. Here, but I'm looking for if we're going to do something on a short-term basis, and I commend your committee for working very quickly to come back with a comprehensive proposal. But the problem with doing a comprehensive proposal is it raises all kinds of issues in a very, very complex field. And so, but here I would like to see us at least consider the option of superimposing an income distribution on top of what you're proposing. So that those people who are making $50,000 a year, there's only a few of them, I'm sure. I had asked for a list of the county, they spread on the county employees in the 400. I still haven't seen it. But I wanted to see how many people we'd be talking about in the $50,000 range and the $60,000 and $70,000 range. Because I've heard anecdotally about managers out there who are making $85,000, $75,000. Who find that their employees that they're supervising are making just as much money.
We already...
You've had that discussion, I understand. Okay. So I'm just concerned
about... Mr. Avenatti, you have a counter-proposal on top of what the committee did.
Well, I just want to put on the table to see if there's any interest in discussion.
All right. And I think there was. You have a response?
Thank you, Mr. Uh-huh. Chair. I commend the committee for great amount of work and care and deliberation. this is, as has been mentioned several times, an interim plan. You know, I think ultimately I would support a progressive scale along the lines of what the majority leader is talking about. We had a discussion about that yesterday. We've discussed it before. I think ultimately that's the way to go. But since this is an interim plan, this is a six-month plan, my suggestion would be we pass this now and we bring this for a more thorough discussion back to the committee. I'd like to join those discussions. And I think, to quote Legislator Rogowski, let's start getting some savings now.
Right.
Let's get a plan in place. And then let's all work together. In fact, with the administration and people who might be opposing this initial plan, let's come together, put our minds together, and work on a more permanent
leader,
plan.
I think that the committee on savings on health insurance would accept this further advice to the committee, and we're going to move forward with what was originally presented at this point.
Can I just get one more legal opinion then? I'd like to make sure that we then can change the benefits of anyone who retires between July 1 and the end of the year. Because I don't want to see some people, you know, like the donut hole in Social Security, I don't want to see some people locked in to a plan where particularly we're talking about the Medicaid situation, the Medicare situation that I suggested, which puts them in might put them in an untenable situation. Because my understanding is that what your intent here is that you can graduate, that if you can go from 5 years to the 10 years, but you can't do it during this 6 month period.
Right, because this is an interim plan, and if you're able to, you have to, it freezes and
What about for somebody who's retiring? They're frozen also.
Well,
this basically is going to say you can't retire during this 6 month period because if you do, you're going to be penalized.
Well, it doesn't say that.
Well, no, but you see, if you're going from 19 years to 20 years over the next 6 months, and I don't know if there's anybody out there doing that.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's why I had to ask for that statistical background. If you're doing that, you're going to be frozen at 19 years forever if you retire.
Well,
if you retire in 20 years, you're still going to be frozen with the 19-year payment.
Because
that's what you just
when
said.
We look, I didn't even have a chance to answer
I'm
your
sorry,
question because you ask a question and then you proceed to make a statement.
Go ahead.
You know, so what I said is that when we do the comprehensive plan, we will then look at retirees. I think I said that. We look at current employees. We look at the coverage. And that's how the comprehensive plan would be priced. This is going to be looked at again.
But what about? But you said that a person is frozen in at the time of this
until until the comprehensive plan goes in place. Now, when the comprehensive plan, we have a chance
Does
to look
it
at
it. Say that somewhere.
Well, it says an interim plan. I mean, that's what an interim plan is. It sunsets.
Yeah, and I can see your concern, Mr. Robin, at
the plan itself sunsets, but it doesn't say that a person who is locked in then sunsets. Because your intent is that the person who retires during this 6 month period is now locked into that payment forever.
Subject to legally changing, but you're right.
Yeah.
There's no intent to sunset. Those benefits were not sunset.
Yeah,
you're right.
That's correct. So now you're going to have this small group of people who may very well be at a 15% level. Who go to 20 years and for other reasons retire.
I just have one statement on this, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the comments that are made.
Although you can, that's the question.
I can sit here and we can put up a bunch of questions that are potentially speculation about what could happen, how many employees can be affected, and we would never get anywhere. We can do that if that's the process we want to engage with.
I'm just trying to get a clarification of what happens to the people who retire during this time period.
The people who retire during this time period, if they retire during this time period and they get benefit during the time period, it says it in the Act right here, that they would pay the greater of the amount of the reference percentage with respect to the overall cost of the premiums or 20% of the difference between the cost of the family plan and the individual plan.
Right, so that's what you've created a donut hole. The people who retire during this 15-month period are stuck with whatever seniority they had on June 30th, 2010, and will pay that rate at all times in the future even if they become 65, even if they had 20 years when
you're
they
wrong.
Left.
Oh, the rate next year could be 20%.
Exactly.
25%.
Sure.
So you know,
the problem is
you'll benefit by retirement.
You just don't wait until you answer the question. I was about to skip the point to another section, which is Section 7, which says when the plan takes effect and when it expires. And that section, subject to renewal or continuation, would give the county board a chance to reevaluate the retiree's plan as well as the current employee's plan.
So are you suggesting that somebody who retires during this six-month period, we let this plan lapse, that on January 1, they no longer have to pay the 15%?
If we left the plan,
if this plan lapses.
Yes.
And we don't replace it.
Then the 15% expires. Mm-hmm. Even for retirees.
Yes, then
I'm comfortable with it. Okay, then I'm comfortable with it. I didn't think that was clear in the Act.
The greater of these two numbers, right? The percentages in here or the 20%, which is the current plan. If the act lapses, which I don't think it will,
this legislation ends December. There's no question. This ends December 31st.
Right, exactly.
My understanding, let's go back that, and that's why I asked that question an hour ago. If someone retires during this period, the answer was I got was that's what they are going to live with
forever.
No, I gave you that impression, I was wrong. I meant to say that they would live with that
only
until we have a comprehensive
for the life of the act.
The lawsuit throws that answer into question. That's a problem because the lawsuit can be used against the retirees as well.
If you read the section that talks about these provisions on the percentages were enacted as part of this act.
Okay.
The provision that actually are the 20% difference are the existing law. That's the existing law.
But if I can, Mr. Chairman, we need to get this clear for the
record. Please.
Active employees were laying out their contributions.
Right.
And that's it.
This
law expires, sunsets December 31st.
Right.
So we know this will be. We might pass the same numbers or different numbers,
right.
Or no numbers. If come next January, there's no law in the books. This expires,
right.
And we're back to today's
right.
situation.
Yeah.
But retirees, again, to the question, if someone retires in September, pursuant to these numbers, if they're in the 10% group, they'll start paying 10%. But we're saying come December 31st. They're out there in that month of January, February. That could change. The answer I got an hour ago is they're locked in. If they're not locked in, we need to make that very clear. I have to think about that. This is a short-term retirement.
Yeah.
They're going to retire, and then the numbers will also change.
Yeah, because
just let's make it clear that it may not be 100%.
Right, maybe it's not clear. So, because why it makes sense for us to have? And let me ask.
And it may be because everyone's playing your game.
Would you mind joining us for a little bit
we need to know if that answer is in here. But
right. That's why I would strike on the what I handed out. That's why I said there were four different points here. The first one was strike the words retirees so that you don't create a new class of retirees out there, which will probably be a very small number. The second was to strike the words at the time this act is initially adopted. To deal with that issue of somebody going
already,
from 19
we already agreed
to
do that because at the time it's adopted, really, we're talking about the effective date, which is July 1.
Are you striking the language from the law?
Yeah, this is not. It's going. The effective date is going to govern. It's the time of the
it's
effective
two
date.
Different, but there are two different issues, and Mr. Rogowski is reiterating it for us. We know when the law takes effect, and we know when the law ends. The question is, does it stick to people after the law ends?
Let's turn this over to the county.
Yeah, Mr. Mann, you've been hearing that all night.
Part of the conversation, not the whole conversation,
okay.
But based on the language of the effective date of the act, I guess you could make it more clear that the retirees are not locked in, but it should be the same for the act applies whether retiree or non-retiree. If it expires, it expires. The same impact on both. That's the way I would read it, but if you want to make it more clear than that...
Yeah, we can make it clearer.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the concern that I have is there was a, last year before you became county attorney, there was a lawsuit called DiBattista versus the County of Westchester, and there was a determination made, which has since been expunged from the record due to a settlement.
Well,
But the theory was that retirees retire with the benefits they have at the time. And it was a lawsuit brought by retirees against the county. But the same theory could be used as a sword against them as well as a shield. And so the county could possibly turn around at the time to say, no, you retired with a 15%, now you've got to pay the 15%. And so the question, let me just posit the question this way. You have a person who is now 19 years with the county. On September 1, they become 20 years with the county. On September 2, they retire. On September 15, they become 65. What are they paying on September 30th? Because now you've got somebody who's gone from changed their years of service with the county, changed their status from employee to retiree.
What were they on the time on July 1?
Less than 65 and less than 20 years of service.
Right, so they would be paying based on whatever the rates are, less than 20 years, greater than, if they are more than 5 years, greater than 10 years, they'd be paying 5%.
Now they go to 20.
But now they go to 20 years.
They pay zero. Like
they go to 20 years when?
After. On September 1, after the law gets enacted.
And they retire when?
They would move to the 5 to the 0. They would move to the 0 to the law.
He said that it sticks to them on July 1.
No.
The law is in effect, but what is the law?
The law says
you go from 5 to 0.
No, it says, but less than 20 years at the time this act is initially adopted.
The law applies to them.
So you agree with my... I made the same change you did. You crossed that out.
We did this before you
said an hour ago.
Thank you. Okay.
But the law applies to it. The law says, oh, now you're 20.
So now they're shifting to 20. Yeah. So during this 15, this 5 to 6 month period, you can shift.
Right.
All right. We have
so now you still have the question of 65.
Emery, you want to join us for further verification on plans? Stay here, Rob. Mr. Kaplowitz, you wanted to.
Nothing productive.
All right. I didn't mean to ignore your input, by the way. Anne-Marie, on plans itself, and you've heard all the dialogue. Please bring some clarification.
Well, once again, the premiums are not based on the age of the employee, active or retired. There is two premiums, a single premium and a family premium. So regardless of how old the employee is, their distinction of single or family is what dictates the premium that they are responsible if they choose the health insurance. So if an individual who's 70 chooses a family plan, is entitled to it, they would pay that base, that family premium. If they're single, they pay single. There's no Medigap component to the POMCO plan.
So the county is paying for those employees, to those retirees today, mm-hmm. who are on Medicare. We're paying a full premium on behalf of those people.
We're taxing for it.
Because there is no Medigap provision in POMCO, because we're self-insured, and the program is sustained by the premiums to pay the claims.
But today, no employees pay those premiums. It's the county paying on behalf of the employees, to itself, in effect.
The county is contributing money into the self-insured program to sustain the claims.
So it's not a premium. It's a self-imposed payment.
Right. It's not real premiums. That's why they're called.
So where's the definition in here of premium?
It's a premium equivalent, and the premium equivalent is the amount that is needed to sustain the enrollment into the plan.
Because we have a third-party administrator. This is self-insured.
No, I understand that. That's why I'm asking the question. Because there is no such thing as a premium rate.
Well, there is a premium. There's an established premium each year that's used to sustain the claims. And that premium, that established premium, is certainly used on retirees because they contribute the difference between single and family currently. They pay 20%.
So we're in effect, this is going to be encouraging employees to drop out of POMCO and to go find a Medigap on their own because it'll probably be cheaper.
It's possible it's cheaper, but most retirees stay in the program because of the drug benefit.
Yeah, but today they don't pay for it.
The Medicare,
they pay the difference only.
They pay the difference between single and family, which is 20%.
20%. Correct, but it's only the difference. They're paying 20% of the difference. They're not paying.
That's a substantial number.
It's about $2,500 for the year. It's $211 a month.
Okay. But what's 20% of the family plan going to be?
Just shy of 3,000, I think.
All right, so 3,000 plus the 20%, or is this
yes,
a place?
Yes, it would be on top of.
So now you're right. Telling a retiree they're going to have to pay $5,000 a year on insurance
when they're
on Medicare.
If they choose to stay in the plan. Remember, it's a voluntary program. You don't have to stay in the plan. And a lot of the retirees, remember, are single. So the population that you're speaking of, a good portion of them are single. They're not family. So they'd be paying 15% of the single rate.
But if you have a husband and wife,
yes,
and they're both on Medicare,
yes.
So we're not paying a gap for them. They're going to be paying the full freight.
As they are now.
They're only paying 20% of the difference. They're not paying 20% of the cost of the plan.
Right, the difference between single and family.
If they're single, they're paying the single rate.
But what I'm saying, I'm just looking at the fairness of this and saying now we're telling them that they're going from nothing to maybe $5,000 and their primary insurer in both cases is Medicare.
If you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, if you take the view that the retiree or employee should not be paying anything, then clearly you are correct.
Right.
But if you take the view that the employee or retiree should be paying something toward their health insurance costs, then
my criticism doesn't just apply to this plan, it applies to the Aspirino plan as well.
I finally agree with you, Lester.
Thank you. But if you agree that they're going to pay something, they're going to be going from zero, which is a, you can't get lower than that. You can go negative if we give them back money to be in the plan. But you're going from zero to something.
Right.
And that is always going to appear to be a substantial increase.
Current.
That's the plan that we're proposing. It's a lot less than it's less than what the county executive was saying. Pay 15%. We came to a compromise that got below where what was proposed and what most of the members of this board, I believe, could live with.
But he didn't just make it to the county executive.
Well, it would have applied the same.
It's the same problem.
It would apply the
you're
same
imposing
one.
On yeah. people, and my concern yeah. is if you're talking about somebody who retires at a $60,000 level, you know, they're maybe getting $25,000, $30,000 in benefits when they retire, and now all of a sudden they're going to be paying $5,000 at the age of 67, and they're on Medicare. So we're encouraging people to then drop the county plan and to go uninsured.
And save more tax dollars.
But you're also then having them at the emergency room, and we have the problem.
No, they have Medicare. What are you talking about?
Not for the gap they don't.
Tom,
this plays into a whole big discussion. If Washington would solve the problem with health insurance more quickly, it would make it a lot easier for us here.
But yeah. we're taking Committee of Finance and the county attorney's opinions that yes, they would have to pay something whatever we saw beyond the. The sunset date. Mr. Chair, I want to...
Still less than paying 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Still less than paying 100%.
I mean, that's the overriding principle here for everything.
All right, people.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one thing just to sum up. Number one, I just want to state for the record, I disagree with the Abenaki plan as well. I certainly agreed with I enjoyed the debate between my two friends on the other side of the aisle, both debating plans that would save less tax dollars than one I support, which is 15% across the board.
Yeah. And I think...
The most regressive.
Yeah. And
most tax savings.
And we have a motion from Mr. Williams on what was suggested earlier.
I'll second it.
Seconded by...
Mr. Abenaki's point clear. What's the answer? This ends for retirees as well at the 6 months.
Yes.
Eliminates everybody.
That's in the record. Any meeting, whatever we decide at sunset time. Right.
Exactly.
All right. Now,
Mr. Chairman, if I can,
your suggestion is going to their committee. For further
on this last point, I'm understanding that you did not delete this line, but you substituted the word on the date affected, on the effective date. That doesn't clarify the issue. By making it, by sticking it to a person, so that...
Can I have your version? I deleted it. Mr. Abenaki, I think it's being noted on the record that it will be whatever we decide beyond sunset on these retirees.
Well, I don't think I have an answer from the county attorney yet as to
the county attorney.
The original
legislation as drafted accepted retirees who are already retired. So
does this do that? Does this impose it on retirees who are now retired?
Well, it may if you if it imposes it on as they retire and then it's changed, it may be an issue.
If it,
in other words, these numbers, the purpose of the language in both plans, the county executive plan and this plan, was to accept the retirees who are already retired. They're locked in.
Right, they're locked into what they were paying at
the
time.
It seems to me the problem would be if the if this sunsets and never happens again, well, that's one thing. But
right.
If it is changed, if the numbers stay the same, that shouldn't be a problem either.
Right.
But if the numbers are changed, then you have the couple people that retired in that six-month period.
Right.
Who you're dealing with them differently than everybody else. Because the plan was lock you in if you're retired. Don't change you.
That was the answer I got an hour and a half ago.
Right.
It would be locked in.
Now, I'm understanding that the authors of the legislation are not intending to lock somebody in, so we have to change the language to reflect what they're saying.
I can tell you what our intention is, Tom. Thank you very much. But our intention...
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, if you would allow people to speak rather than jumping in. We agreed that we wanted retirees to pay a part of the cost. This is an interim plan of which once the interim plan sunsets, and it's assuming, obviously, that we are going to enact a comprehensive plan. That comprehensive plan will take into account the cost that retirees should be paying as well as the cost that active employees should be paying. And the new legislation will reflect that. That's the intention of the legislation.
Okay.
Now,
Mr. Chairman.
Now, if you make an assumption that, well, we do nothing, if you make an assumption that nothing happens, that the plan sunsets and we have no legislation in place, I think what happens is that the retirees would end up paying what they're paying today.
And they would be locked in now, no matter what the new plan is. They're locked in at the old plan.
At the old plan, exactly. They were locked in at the old plan because that's what the sunset effect would do. Because
So you're saying these people are paying 15% forever and nobody else pays anything?
What is the old plan? Could you tell him what the old plan is, please?
The old plan is, well, the current plan.
The current plan.
Single retirees pay zero. Retirees who choose family program pay 20% of the difference between single and family premium.
Right, that's the old plan.
Right.
Okay,
That's the current plan.
That's the current plan.
It would be the old plan.
Under this new proposal, they will pay a percentage, let's say 15%.
Yes.
Okay, now, January 1 comes. These people will continue to pay 15% forever. Unless you put some language in here that says no, their obligation to pay also lapses. Because now the county employees will no longer be paying, but the retirees still will because they'll be locked in, under one theory. Under a second theory, no, their obligation lapses as well because the law lapses. Which one is it?
I think I made it very clear that if nothing happens,
right,
and the legislation lapses, and no legislation, we go back to status quo ante. That's what we go back to. And status quo is 20% of the difference.
The concern is that retiring, they lock in their benefits on the date of retirement, and the benefits carry with it obligations. I would agree with you that we can change that, but I would like to see some language in here that says that.
I think the language is quite clear.
The county attorney said that they could very well be in a situation where we have this small group of people locked into this plan.
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't say that. I thought you did. I'm sorry.
Once again, you're putting words in people's mouth.
I mean, this is.
It says
in section 7, right? In section 2, right? First, if you look at section 2, it tells you what the retirees would pay. It'd be the greater of 1, the above referenced percentages with respect to the overall cost of the premium rate of the basic insurance plan, or 2, the greater of that, or 2, 20% of the difference between the cost and the individual.
That's pursuant to the law. It doesn't deal with the question of longevity.
What happens if the law disappears?
Can I finish? Section 7 says this act shall take effect July 1 and shall expire December 31st. It says subject to renewal. But assuming you stop right there, right? And the act expires December 31st, meaning that everything expires. That's what it means. Everything expires. That means it goes back to what was in place prior to the act. That's what it means. It's very. That's how you read a section, an effective date,
retirees.
Including retirees. If you go back to the act as it was, they would been they would these sections with the graded 15-20% would have last, and retirees would end up paying the greater of 0 or 20% of the difference.
I guess the technical term is vesting. When their benefits vest at retirement, are their benefits dependent on the current state of the law, or are they dependent on what the law was?
This is not a benefit. This is a cost or contribution.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you to around?
That's what the case the law
was about. To try to clarify.
We have a blue sheet that we
right. If, in fact, let me try it this way. We passed this law for 6 months. January 1st, a new law takes effect. Under a new law, it says everyone, including retirees, can pay 25%.
Right.
Now, so the question is, those folks who do retire in this 6 months...
will pay 25%. They'll pay whatever they do.
They're going to be 15%.
Right, I thought they'd be locked in at the 15% that they retired. But if your answer is...
No. They will not be locked into the 15% because basically the 15%... The intention is that the interim plan is interim. In that
there's no separate law about retirees and how it affects them.
No, it's not.
I think we're asking for another lawsuit.
That actually deals with this says that you can change the cost that you charge for retirement plan. So it's not. You keep raising the DiBattista lawsuit, but you ought to look at. But that deals with the benefits as opposed to the cost.
This is a benefit.
No, it's not. This is a cost of a plan. Benefits have not been defined. Benefits will be defined when we do a plan.
Then they'd be defined in a lawsuit.
Do you think
the DiBattista lawsuit would have been different if it was about the cost versus the benefits? Or do you think it still could have come out the same?
I think it would have been different.
But you don't know.
Well, if you look at the case law, I mean, have you done any research in this area?
Yeah, I lecture about you. Absolutely.
Have you? You should, because this is clearly about the cost that can be, whether or not the county can change its plan and not only the county, but cities as well as I think the state.
I just think it's an interesting legal issue that DiBattista, you make a good point when you're differentiating what Tom's saying, that DiBattista dealt with the benefit, not the cost.
Right.
I'm just saying to you, I don't know if the case would have come out so different if it was the cost as well. That's all I'm saying.
I think based on what I've read, I think that it would have. I mean, and that's my opinion.
All right, this item has been moved and seconded as presented as an interim plan, people. What is your pleasure? We don't have much time, so at this point, I guess, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
No.
Opposed? I'm going to put it up without prejudice.
Okay, in one without prejudice. All right.
Discussion.
Thank you. Listen, we have some priority. Please remain in place. Commissioner of Finance, you're here for... For which item of the agenda? We have tax anticipation notes and finance voting. Are you here for both of those items?
Anticipation note.
Okay. Let's do that so that we can. And please, tax anticipation act authorizing the county of Westchester to issue $80 million in anticipation note. Please.
As we've discussed,
members. Tom, I really need to move forward.
We will need to do a short-term borrowing this year of $80 million to sustain us until the tax warrant comes in at the end of May. This amount is needed because of the cash situation that we are in, because of our reserves being down and the taxes coming in at the end of May.
People, and this was mentioned before, we had the commissioner before, that we may encounter this situation. Any comments on this item?
Straw Rattle, so moved. If there's a second, we could have discussion on them.
All right, moved and seconded, Mr. Rogowski.
Yeah, just the way it's worded, it's the $80 million or so much as may be necessary. We're running out of time, I guess, getting to May. There are costs associated with the, putting that. So is it your intent to actually do the 80, or do you go out with 60 and wait to see if you need the other 20?
No, it will be 80.
So it will be 80.
Okay. It is 80. All right, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
And anything else that you're here for, or this was the item you were here to present, right? Thanks so much for your input on the plan that we just moved forward. County Attorney, as usual, Mr. Mann, thanks so much.
The interest, the budget, do we have 100, is this pursuant to our budget? Do we allocate 100,000? That's all.
Yes.
We are the budget leader.
Yes, thanks so much. We have priority what? Which fund?
$60 million, like that.
Yeah. All right, for the assistance of the Board of Elections, who do we have?
Straw Rattle?
Yes.
I wonder if we we go to that item, we have the Commissioner of Environmental Facilities and staff here for quite some time on some items that should be rather quick.
Well, actually, we have blue sheet issues that I'm trying to couple with Mr. Ryan. And the finance voting system for Board of Elections, I think we have a timing issue that I was highlighted to me. Anybody here?
Do we have anybody? The administration did not send this down. This did not come from the administration.
Where did it come
from? From the chairman. Look on the agenda. It's a correspondence from the chairman.
What are we looking at, Tom?
All right.
The voting machines.
Can somebody get a hold of the chairman to see what the urgency is here?
I assume it came from the Board of Elections.
In the meantime, Mr. Alvarado, I would urge us to, in light of the hour, I would urge us if we could move on to the public works items, which I do believe would be relatively quickly.
Okay. Chairman Ryan, you're right. Let's do it.
All right.
Public works representative.
Call the public works, parks, labor, transportation. Other various and sundry subjects.
Yeah,
committee
my
order.
Chairman Ryan, I know we had this sewer district modification, removal, return Cortland, and return court. For the record, gentlemen, if you would introduce yourselves.
Tom Laurel, Commissioner, Department of Environmental Facilities.
Marion Pompa, Associate Engineer, Department of Environmental Facilities.
Please, on the items on the joint agenda with Chairman Ryan's committee.
Well, we have the first number of items. We have four parcels in the town of Harrison to be removed from the Blybrook Sanitary Sewer District. This will allow more capacity to be obtained for other people in the district. Most of the lots are large-sized lots, so they're not really would be impacted, and they're not close to a county trunk sewer.
All right, go through to the list, and I guess we will vote for them as a package, Chairman Ryan. Unless there are any.
I would recommend they stand on the agenda all separately, and technically you should be taking separate votes on each.
All right. So item A17, as presented by the commissioner, for budget appropriations, all in favor? A motion?
I'll move it.
Okay.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded for budget appropriations. Chairman Ryan, I'll move it for your committee.
Is there a second for public works?
Moved by Mr. Rogowski. You're in that committee, right? I'll second your motion. For both committees, if I may.
Just one quick question. Now, what part of our, I was surprised to see that the Blindbrook, that little section around the airport there, the purchase is in the Blindbrook district?
Yes, that's correct.
Anyone else over there in the Blindbrook, or is that these parcels it? I mean, it's very, is it just a small little area in the Blindbrook?
Well, the Blindbrook trunk sewer runs all the way up through the airport.
Right, so all along Purchase Street there, they're not, so there's a lot more people in Blindbrook, huh?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But there is a sewer line. Is there a sewer in Purchase? There's a sewer line in Purchase Street itself, but well, these houses? Or is it in Purchase Street?
Well,
not the County Trunk. The County Trunk county actually Trump runs along the Blind Brook through SUNY Purchase and through Pepsi. As far as what the local lines go, I'm not 100% sure.
But in terms of coming out of the district, as long as they're next to the local, I mean, the issue is that they're next to the local line,
there's no local line.
Well, there's no local line either. Okay.
All right, for all purposes, for both committees, if I can, Mr. Ryan, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, moving right along. Item 818 on our agenda, Mr. Law.
A18 is the actual resolution if there's no negative significant impact from the removal of these four items. And A19 is just the actual act. So you could vote on all three of those. One, the public hearing, one,
all right,
the negative impact, and then.
Is that your pleasure, Chairman Ryan? The three of them together?
Well, they come as a package.
As a package, okay.
Well, they're presented for discussion as a package. I would still urge committees to always vote on individually listed items.
Okay, and can we assume the same motions and seconds on the other two items and for the next two items, if we may?
Without objection, then Public Works will take the prior vote.
All right. So the three items...
And budget will take the prior vote as well.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. So we're going to move right on to A23. Mr. Ryan, you can take the lead on the items.
All right. We have on item A23, Commissioner, this is presented together with 24... And 25, take those for discussion purposes, please.
Okay, this is a resolution to set a public hearing, and then the second one would be no significant impact, and then the third one is the actual act itself to modify the sewer district to remove 11 parcels in the town of Harrison from the Mamaroneck Sewer District. Again, we have no objections to this. This will reserve capacity for other people who want to enter the district.
All right. I have a motion for Public Works on item 23.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. And the motion for budget on 23?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor on item 23?
Aye.
All right. On item 24, if there's no objection, take the prior vote for the approval of item 24 by both committees. Item 25 is before us. If there's no objection, take the prior vote by the joint committees for the approval of item 25.
So moved.
Second. Bob, I can't.
All right.
Second.
All right. Without objection, we take that vote. Item 26.
Item 26 is a resolution to set a public hearing. Proposed modification of the Peekskill Sanitary Sewer District to return one parcel in the town of Cortland. And item 27 is the actual act to modify the sewer district. This is one parcel that went out with the original 3,000. It's only 10,000 square feet, so it probably should not have been taken out. And we agree that it should be added back into the Peekskill Sanitary Sewer District.
Thank you, Commissioner. On the resolution, is there a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
We have a motion. Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Question. What's on the parcel?
Go ahead. It's a house that I think is going to be taken down. So it's a very small lot, though. It's only 10,000 square feet.
What's the position of the owners with respect to this? Do they care?
They petitioned the town to come back into the district.
So it's with the concurrence of the owners.
Right.
Correct.
Right. And for budget, is there a motion? Second.
Second.
Okay. I obviously no other questions for the budget committee as well.
Yes, for both items, I guess.
Both. All right. All in favor, item 26.
Aye.
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 Item 26 is approved. And item 27, Public Works is agreeable to taking the prior vote for the approval of item 27.
So move the budget.
And item 27 is approved as well.
Welcome.
Are there any other items to come before the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee?
Trust me, I know you feel.
Take a motion to adjourn the committee.
So move.
Second. Okay. Without objection, then. The committee is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Item C1, Chairman Jenkins, for your request.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular bond act is a bond act that totals approximately $2 million, and it is of support of various and sundry items that relate to the HAVA Act. It is for the purchase of software. We did, in the last session, go over to the Board of Elections to understand what they were trying to do with this particular software, which is to do the summary and tallying and actually the programming of the voting machines, and it is a requirement on the HAVA for this thing to be done. There is a breakdown, I think, of all of the items that they were requesting, but there is a need for this particular item to move forward as expeditiously as possible, as the machines have been starting to be received at 450 Sawmill River Road at approximately 160 machines a day until they get to the grand total of 1,000 machines, which they're supposed to have. So it's the EMS software. It is also for the network equipment, workstations, peripherals that happen to support this particular item. I also believe it is actually it is. It's item C1.
It's C1. It is there. Just look for it in the mix.
The board of
C1 like this.
I'm sure it's in here somewhere.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The Board of Elections has been has received communication from the State Board of Elections with their concern about the delay in this particular item. We actually had this act in front of us in the last session, but the Board Budget and Appropriations Committee, as well as Government Operations at the time, held it as we were going, and we wanted to hear directly from the Board of Elections what the concern was. So with that, at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, if it's in order, I would so move this particular item to be in order.
It is in order. I just noticed, and I'll second your motion, Chairman Jenkins. I noticed we have an appropriation of $2 million. This would utilize half of the appropriation, or
I'm sorry.
I'm looking at the fact sheet with the formula. It says $4 million there. This we would be utilizing about half of what's appropriated.
This is right, and this is again the breakdown is here in the description that it is for $391,000 for the privacy voting booths, $391,000 for purchasing of the voting machines, about $375,000 for the privacy booths that the people utilize when they are marking the optical scan ballot, the supplies for the voting machines and the equipment and bags. About $1 million for that, and then finally the EMS software, which is the thing that we started with, which is $175,000. All of it, again, is required from us from the HAVA Act, and it.
Mr. Abena.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed the committee report begins. Your committee is in receipt of a transmittal from the county executive recommending approval. Do we have anything from the county executive recommending approval or sending this to us?
Yes, we did. We did have this particular item. What happened was the expediting to get the bond act on.
My understanding is the county executive refused to sign the letter and did not send it down.
No, the county executive did not sign the letter for us to initially put this particular thing on the agenda on the white sheet. right? So we put this thing on, and we will have, and if we
That's
do
not my understanding.
If we do not have the county executive's signature on the transmittal letter, then it will not move forward tonight. But the county executive,
the county executive's office,
the
Board of Elections,
the county executive's office did not sign the transmittal on Thursday evening when it went up to them, and they were unavailable to do so. But to make sure it was properly in front of this committee for action for this evening, what we did was put it on as a receipt for the transmittal of the Bond Act, and we expected and we were advised that the county executive would be signing that, and my understanding was he was supposed to sign that this morning, but I see...
No, Chairman Jenkins, it was left for their discussion, and they have not stated a position yet on it. So they're still in discussion regarding signing off on the transmittal letter.
If the transmittal letter does not, if the transmittal letter doesn't sign, if the I'm sorry.
Can I just ask, what is the rush on this? This hasn't come to committee yet.
Let them speak.
The rush on this particular thing is that we are out of compliance with HAVA, and the machines are being received as we speak, and they do not have the software to program the machines because this Bond Act includes the software to do that. It also includes the bags that the equipment is supposed to go out in, as far as the paper ballots and all sorts of stuff.
Chairman Jenkins, I would
you can vote out without prejudice.
Chairman, there were emails back and forth just as from the company that's supplying this stuff.
I'm familiar with this.
All right, but so that, you know, they're making the point that...
My point is that, first of all, as you know, from day one, I've had serious concerns about this whole operation. Number two, my understanding was HAVA was paying for all of the machines, and that we were paying only for the subsidiary materials.
No, that's the
well. That's if you read the financial here, that's what we were not supposed to be paying for the machines. We were supposed to be paying county share was $390,000 for the machines, and everything else was supposed to be was our cost. But there was the possibility of HAVA money coming for that as well. I think we need an explanation from the Board of Elections as to where we are in this. There's nobody from the administration here. There's nobody from the Board of Elections here. If there was such an urgency, then I think the administration would be here telling us, please do this. Or somebody from the Board of Elections would be here saying, please do this. This has not come to the committee yet. The chairman put it on the agenda for this evening. It was not put on by the county executive. And I checked it out myself, and I'm understanding that what the representative of the county executive's office said is true. They have not yet signed the transmittal letter. I think they're trying to investigate it. This did not come from them. This came directly from the Board of Elections. The Board of Elections is not here. I personally have a problem with it all the way down the line. We signed a letter ourselves a while back asking for the governor to do what he can to see if we can keep the mechanical machines. And this is turning out to be a major, major cost for us. I, for one, as an individual legislator, I'm not going to stand in the way of this board doing whatever it wants to do. I am not going to vote for this. I cannot.